And that is a take that's very, very hot.
No, ma'am.
We don't need no masthead. We don't need no rules. Cause we just talk and bounce boys like a bunch of crazy ass fools.
Well, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good day. This is a very late edition of Masthead Podcast. Todd, it makes me cry. I am exhausted. I've had a horrible week, but I just couldn't be away from you guys. And I'm here with Will I Am.
How you doing, guys? It's good to be back.
And we also have live from, where are you at, Globetrotter, this week?
I'm just going to lie and say Portland. Hey, everybody, it's Bricks.
We might be joined later by some other people. I'm going to give a special shout out to our new doctor who can't be with us. He's asleep because he's on call at like dark 30 over in England. A1, he wanted to wish you guys well. Come on, use first and all the Dr. Jarkin that he likes to see on the podcast. So with the introductions all down, who's ready to be happy because Spurs have a new manager?
Woo! I'm so excited. In many ways, number one, it's not somebody I have to look up because I don't really follow any other league, so he doesn't have like FDB, some weird acronym. I know this guy. I think Southampton was one of the most fun clubs to watch last year for many reasons, and I think that he is a big part of that. And he's pretty hot.
He looks like a hobbit, though, a little bit.
A hot hobbit?
Someone pointed it out. Yeah, a hobbit. He kind of has like a bit of a hobbit look to him. But no, I'm pretty excited. He seems like he's going to be. He seems to have a similar idea for playing football the way ABB did.
Yeah.
But he also seems to have a clue about working with people and not being stubborn and being afraid of things. So I'm pretty optimistic about it. I don't know. He seems. I have a good vibe. I guess that would be the good thing. It's nice that we have someone who seems to have a plan or an idea, something that they want to play.
Yeah, I'm also... go ahead, Cry.
I was just going to say, I'm happy that Pookie's with us now. Like, even though I don't really... I was hoping for to continue on with the three-letter acronym for a name for our managers with the FDB. I guess I can get behind the Pookie. He's Argentinian, so he can speak Spanish to Soldado and Lamela and whoever other Spanish-speaking players we pick up over the summer.
And probably Portuguese, too.
Well, also, speaking
we'll
Spanish,
will
be yeah, it'll be nice when we pick up Isco from Real Madrid. That's going to be, he's going to just bed into the team much quicker, much quicker than Lamela did. And something else on Pochettino is I get irrationally attached to managers. And if you guys don't know, I'm a huge fan of AVB. I think we should rehire him, even though we hired Pochettino. But I know that I'm going to instantly, like, first game of the season, just be totally irrationally attached to him and not be able to see any bad things just like I did with AVB. And quite honestly, I forgot that we had shit-canned Tim Sherwood until they announced Pochettino. I'm like, oh, yeah, we don't have a manager.
Poor Tim.
I feel like everything that happened after December 16th, we kind of is kind of like a black hole of thought. Like, we really don't really remember it. The Men in Black came with their little special win that erased our memory, and we went from ABB to a nothingness, and now we have the Pookie sensation. And hopefully he leads us to glory.
Yeah, I've kind of whitewashed Tim Sherwood from my memory. And I hope he has a long, successful career of punditry and managing Norwich or some other lower Premier League team. That's probably what will happen.
I actually think he'll go to Doncaster right as that guy from 1D, Handpuke guy, takes over the bid and actually starts owning the club because that's, a thing, apparently. He's trying to own Doncaster. So once he takes over Doncaster, he hires Tim Sherwood. Tim Sherwood joins One Direction. I mean, there's just so many awesome places.
You've given us a lot of thought, haven't you?
Yeah, I do think a lot about
Isn't there a new British boy band that's on the come up after One Direction? Like, I really don't follow, like, children's music that much, but I've heard, like, rumblings of, like, somebody else, like, another boy band coming along the way.
Justin Bieber?
Unless it's a Tottenham boy band, fronted by Eric Lamela and Tom Carroll and Christian Eriksen and Lewis Holtby.
Oh, man. May half of them get sold.
How I feel about something like that.
Yeah. The jury's out.
Talk about what we're going to call Pochettino, though. I just want to get this out of the way. This has been a big debate.
Pookie.
I feel like just saying Mauricio is a great name. Just call him Mauricio.
I think
it
Mauricio
just lends so much mystery and so much intrigue to who he is.
It's very
Mauricio.
Sexy.
Yeah.
It's a very sexy name, but as you guys know, I'm a huge fan of the Real Housewives franchise on Bravo TV. And Mauricio is the husband to Kyle Richards on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So I hear Mauricio, I think this poor soul in Beverly Hills that's married to one of these housewives. So I don't think I can ever detach the two because Furs and Housewives are the two most important things in my life, and I'm not sure I can share that name. But somebody did mention Hot Pot Pochet. Hot Pochet, like Hot Pocket.
Hot Pochet.
I mean, why not? But that's only if things start to sour, because they did recall all those Hot Pockets last year for making people sick. Let's save that one when we lose to Liverpool 5-0.
Mopo is the absolute worst.
Oh, I'm Team Mopo.
It would have been a good name until Skip Jack decided that he wanted to support it. And
that guy.
Once he's got the endorsement of Skip Jack, and I'm like, I can't, no.
Yeah, no, that motherfucker.
Poison.
Chilean dictator?
Pinochet?
Pinochet.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just trying to remember because somebody kept saying something.
Pochettino.
And now all I could think of, that was the name that kept popping in my head. I kept seeing Pinochet. I was like,
well,
if
he goes for those two double training sessions or whatever he does, who knows what the players will be saying in the locker room at that point, let's be honest now.
So we have a few names.
Once it goes tits up, Pinochet might be his name.
So we have that and Hot Pochet in our arsenal, of things that could go bad. No pun intended. We have all these good feelings now. Like, what do we land on?
I don't know. Like, I just don't know how to feel. Like, this is the first manager where I don't know how I feel about him once I've been introduced. Like, with my Spurs experience as a fandom, like, I came in when Yo was, like, in the middle of his first five finish, but no, we were getting top four. Then it was the second year with the lasagna gate. No, first year was lasagna gate. Then it was the second year, and then we had the Berbatov and Michael Carrick left. Berbatov left.
Keane left.
Poole left for the first time. Like, it was Defoe left. Like, it was. And we went to the Wande Ramos session, and well, fuck that guy. Even though he brought us a trophy. And then we had Sir Harry Redknapp. And then we went to AVB, and everybody was like, I was all happy and joyous. And then Tim Sherwood came and killed us, killed hope. And, like, now I'm just so burnt from, it's like a bad case of gonorrhea.
Like, I'm comfortable
I'm
not knowing
scared
about
to have
that.
Sex again because of Tim Sherwood.
Well, my kind of feeling about it is that I'm amazed at how quick it happened, like, that we had Pochettino confirmed.
Yeah.
As a manager, when you think about it, like, Tim gets his P45, and he's out the window, and that's it. Like, happy trails, break claws, have a good time. You know, then there's all this shit about Ancelotti and everything else. And like, oh, we're going to get Carlo if Real lose the Champions League because they're going to can him, and they might can him anyways. And FDB is pissed off Levy for whatever reason. And so it goes on and on. But I didn't expect it to be this quick. Mm-hmm. Like, it just happened. It's, what, 3 or 4 weeks? and we have a manager in place. Obviously, there's not going to be a press conference, I guess, until after the World Cup. But it's just kind of like, okay, wait.
Which is understandable.
We have someone, mm-hmm. but I'm afraid to get excited because I kind of bought into, like, the redemption angle of our last charming, like, foreign manager.
No,
and we all know how that ended, right? So it's just like, wait a minute. Do I want to get excited? I kind of do, but I've been burned once. I don't know. I'm kind of like cry. It's just I don't know how to feel.
I'm really excited, and I'll tell you why. I really didn't hate Tim Sherwood. I know. And I loved Red Knapp, and I loved AVB. Like, I don't know. I'm just like, they're all great until they prove otherwise. So to me, Tim Sherwood, still not a job that any of us can do. We're still being armchair managers, and he was crazy. Like, don't get me wrong, Tim Sherwood was nuts. But based on what we know from the press, that is. But I don't know. I still think he's pretty cool. I don't know. Like, I don't have a problem with the guy.
Tim got put in he got a rough deal.
He did.
For what he had to do. There's no question. But he also didn't do himself
any favors
in the way he behaved, and that's the problem. Like, Redknapp was a special case because that's just kind of what he does, you know, his thing. But he never, I don't think, in my experience with Perry, he never called out players in the same way that Sherwood did. He was never as abrasive with the press. Like, he was friendly with the press, and he said things. But Tim was trying to channel all these things that he said Kenny Dalglish used to do, that was like, you know, tell it how it is when he was playing for him. And it's just like, no, it doesn't work that way. You're inexperienced, that's fine. But you're calling out the boardroom, calling out your players,
mm-hmm.
you're calling out previous managers, you're calling out all these things as you're still managing the team. It's like, you're not doing yourself any favors. Like,
but the real
to try and be honest, but just dial it back. So that was the thing for me.
But were you guys, I mean, the real question remains, were you not entertained?
I wasn't. I think I was pretty adamant during the entire time we were doing this podcast about my feelings about Tim Sherwood. It's not, it was, I can't wait for this guy to go, and anything that goes right with Spurs is in spite of Tim Sherwood.
I was going to say the only thing about Tim Sherwood is I didn't get super attached to him because I thought that we should have never canned AVB midseason. So I think that maybe I didn't let myself get attached one way or another to Sherwood. I assumed that the season was kind of over when we fired AVB, just because I don't believe in canning managers midseason. I think that is such a risk, and there are no, people say, oh, you know, there's that new manager bump. But, you know, the thing is you cannot absolutely definitively measure whether or not it's good to can a manager in the middle of the season, because you're always comparing apples and oranges. So you can't compare how we finished the season to if AVB would stay, because AVB didn't stay. So really it does have to do with the fact whether or not you believe it. And I don't always believe it, but there's no way to tell.
Yeah, and I mean, my thing with Tim Sherwood is that I had an open-ish mind, because I didn't really believe that AVB should have gone, but as time went on, I was kind of like, okay, clearly he didn't seem as involved in things. He didn't seem to care as much.
Something was up.
Anymore. So obviously he burnt bridges. There were bridges burnt. Whatever, and that happened. That's fine. Like, people move on. It obviously wasn't working. Whatever. Sherwood comes in, and I was kind of like, okay, whatever. It's probably the best choice we had. You know, he just didn't have, like, I think Tim Sherwood can be a good manager eventually, but he should not be getting his first gig for a team that is competing for a Champions League spot. Like, that's not where he should be. He's overmatched to do that. He's out of his depth. We lost just as terribly to many teams as we lost terribly to with ABB. And this comparison that you were talking about, that ties into my whole hate of the term win percentage now, at this point. Like, that term can die in a fire. So-and-so has this win percentage. So-and-so has this win percentage. I don't give a fuck. Win percentage is, like, stats are great, but win percentage has been overblown in this divisive divide that's happened in Spurs fandom. That's like you're either ride or die for Harry, ride or die for ABB, hate ABB, ride or die for anyone who's not ABB, and it's just like, why is everyone trying to score these metaphorical points about who's the best manager?
So I want to say that Willie right there did not say ride or die for Tim Sherwood because no one was ride or die for Tim Sherwood.
Well, no, they were ride or die for Tim Sherwood because they were ride or die for anyone who was not ABB.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. That's
because
the thing.
Wanted,
you're not ride or die for
Tim Sherwood. They wanted to see this mythical, beautiful football that Spurs have played but never won anything doing.
I have...
the '60s, but...
I'm ride or die for Tony Pulis. Just throwing that out there.
I have a divisive opinion about the Tottenham way. It's not divisive in that sense. I do think that there is a history of just like push and run with Arthur Rowe and Bill Nick and kind of the idea that, you know, Tottenham in their training session, if you read any books or kind of articles with players who were there, who were youth players, let's say, until about the mid-80s, like Keith Birkinshaw and Peter Shreve, there was always a focus on, like, that Tottenham was a place where, you know, everyone could do the technical stuff. Like, that was the big thing. When you were youth, that was what the training was. It was technical. It was the showmanship. But I also think that as fans, and every fan base is guilty of this, we kind of overblow that concept of, you know, the Tottenham way, which is attacking football or whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, it kind of frustrates me sometimes that people say that, because some of the Bill Nicholson quotes that people hang on to, they could be taken out of context. It's not that, like, that style is something that drew me to the club, but I feel that sometimes, as fans, and I'm guilty of this too, we clutch to that as, like, a life raft, but maybe it's not always as true as we'd like to think it is.
Mm-hmm. It's easily over-dramatized.
Yeah, and there's one other thing that I'll mention. I think I mentioned this book before. It's by Martin Clope and Adam Pally. It's called The Boys from White Hart Lane, and it's interviews with a bunch of the players from, like, that early 80s team that won, like, last European Cup.
Yeah.
And, like, FA Cups and that kind of thing, with the Ricky Villa, Ozzy Ardiles, Glenn Holloway era. And there's someone in there, I forget which player, and it's just around, like, when we won the 2008 League Cup, and he talks about how Tottenham fans and Tottenham players are so fond of living in the past, and how, like, hanging on to past glories that we had at one time or another, and that it almost is, like...
Arsenal-ish?
No, but it's just, like, you have to live in the moment to a certain extent. Like, yes, those were there, but you have to let them go to a certain extent.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know, I think there's, like, and I think the problem is with all of these managers that we've had and they've been so divisive, it's just kind of exacerbated these stupid divides that exist on the internet, like, in the fan base that you see.
Well, I mean, one of the Bill Nicholson quotes that I always think of, and might be one of his most famous, is, like, it's better to fail aiming high than to achieve success low, or some shit like that. Don't quote me or Bill Nick. But, this is my issue with constantly, and I'm not sure if this is what people think that Levy is like, or if this is what people feel in their hearts, or just, like, kind of what it is. But we have made Champions League one time, right? In the past how many years? I mean, we qualified for fourth and got bumped by Chelsea, but it's hardly our birthright. And I get the whole wanting to be your best, but you know what? That is always, if you look at that quote in a vacuum, it's a great sentiment. When you look at it as opposed to who your opponents are, how much money they have to spend, you got to be realistic with who you are within the league. And I think that maybe that's what you're speaking to a bit, but that one always comes up over and over for me again. I go, because we're not title contenders. We haven't been for some time. And we don't automatically fight. We are on the cusp of making it into the Champions League every year, but we hardly have done that. So let's be realistic and do what we can with the resources given. But,
yeah.
I mean, I think people really believe that Levy thinks that he's canning everybody who's not guaranteed champion spot whenever. And who knows what goes on behind the scenes. But
5-year contract. That's new.
to move this conversation along a little bit, Now that we have a new manager, before we can decide how what we need to set as goals for Spurs for next season, which we can't really do because of this whole World Cup and we don't know what's coming in. But let's take a second to figure out what the squad needs. What would Pookie or Mopo or
Pioche,
was whatever his name would be for us. What do we need to as a squad? What does the squad need actually? What do we need to cut away, get rid of, and what do we need to bring in?
A left back.
Okay, left back.
I think we need a left back. Like Danny Rose.
That you would have in mind?
Danny, I don't really, like, the thing is, like, I was of the mind earlier on, because it's kind of like, it's hard to find left backs who are ready-made and ready to go.
Yeah.
If you go Danny Rose, could be fine, he might develop. But he didn't really show anything beyond, like, he seemed to be playing really good until he got that toe injury, like turf toe.
And 90%.
And then he went to shit. Like, when he came back from that, he was just shit. And it was funny, because we depended so much on him for our attack before he got hurt. And then he got injured. So I was originally of the opinion, oh, Danny Rose is fine, you know, where are we going to find a kid with that much upside, blah, blah, blah. And now it's kind of like, okay, he's probably not cut out for this because he's a left winger who's converted to a left back. So I think that that's the biggest issue, but I don't know who you sign, because we're not going to get Luke Shaw. We're not going to, that's just not going to happen.
Ryan Bertrand?
Maybe, I just, like, it's so hard, though, to figure it out, because...
The Sevilla, I would say I can't remember his name, the Sevilla left back, we've linked to these past couple of days. I can't, for the life of me, I cannot, his name escapes me, but I know Liverpool's in for him, and Arsenal have been in for him too, because they've been calling him they call him the bail stopper over in Spain, so I don't know his name. I just cannot place his name at the moment, but. I've heard that name's been thrown around.
Alberto Perez? That's who you mean. Alberto Moreno Perez? Yeah, he's the left back for Sevilla. Yeah. Yeah, he's been tied to... Yeah, Liverpool, I think, has been the club that's apparently been bidding on signing him, I guess. I mean, Ashley Cole's always an option.
I happen to love the guy. I'd love to see Arsenal fans. Yeah, let's sign him. Let's see what Arsenal fans do about it. They're already bent out of shape.
Well, I mean, we took a punt on one former Gooner before, and that kind of worked for a season and a half.
A Chelsea player. He was a Gooner.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, last one for, like, he went for a triple crown around London at that point.
Kind of have a soft spot for that guy. He did not get a lot of love, and, I mean, he went just, to the best, but, hey.
To digress, he kept us in the Champions League.
Yeah.
He had that one goal line clearance against AC Milan. That was huge, but he was also, like, the only player on that team who had that level of experience. And then the 3-2 win that we had against Arsenal that season, too. I remember Jermaine Genus was quoted as saying that, like, Galas talked to him the whole time about playing a holding midfield role. So it's just funny. Like, he had shitty returns in his third season because he was old as hell. But his first season was quite good.
That.
So, I mean, Lightning could strike twice. You never know. But fuck Ashley Cole.
Well,
But you know what? Here's something that maybe might... I know he'll hate it, but we'll see how it goes in the World Cup. I would like to see Vertonghen be played at the left back a little bit more. I know he hates it. I know he wants to play center back, but I think his future might be better he might get more consistent playing time and better returns as a left back than as a center back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, like, as someone who, like, played as a fullback my entire time as a soccer player and still plays and is coached. And Vertonghen's fine, but he's no good in a one-on-one situation on the wing. He's too slow. He doesn't, that's the thing I've always noticed with him when he's out there. He's not very good at, like, one-on-one defending when he's out on the wing. He's better in the middle, because when you're in the middle, you have more time to react and cut a play out.
Yeah.
As opposed to when you're taking on a winger, you have to be right on them so that they're, you know, like, that you're closing the space and stuff. And he tends to get burned a lot. So that's always been my problem with Vertonghen, is that he gets burned way too much.
I think part of it also is, I agree with that 100%. I also think people playing left back get burned. with this current squad, just because we haven't had a left winger that has that overlap and the ability to speed up and help on defense the way Lennon does on the right that we've gotten so used to, and actually that has made Kyle Walker look really good and helped him out as he's developed on the right. Sigurdsson's never been fast. Chodley is physical, but not super quick on getting back on defense, and both of them have improved doing that on the left wing, and I don't think I've seen that from Townsend yet either. So, to a certain extent, whoever we bring in left back, they have got to be so solid at, they've got to be really fast, is my thing, because we don't have that support from our left wing.
Danny Rose is fast, he just doesn't know how to defend. That's the problem.
So,
he's fast, but he doesn't know how to jockey. He doesn't know how to, like...
Yeah, but, take. I mean, we've watched Kyle Walker learn that, haven't we?
Yeah, but Kyle Walker's been a defender from the start. That's the trick of it.
Yeah, that's very good
Maybe then Nalton will get some more time, and over summer he'll be like, you're going to play left back, and like, that's going to be it. But,
I would be surprised if Kyle Naughton's still here.
No!
Because he had an interview where he said he wanted first-team football at one point earlier, like mid-season. So I'd be highly surprised.
That was also when Satan Sherwood was in charge too, and I think everybody was trying to leave.
True, and then Walker did get hurt, and Naughton was all right. So
I think Walker's at 90%, so he may have another. Naughton may have another year of first-team football.
I think we should keep Naughton and Walker, let the two Kyles fight out. They both are good serviceable right backs. Walker would be more for them, like, we're playing a more attacking, pressing style, and Naughton more for, like, when we're playing more counter-attacking, sit back and hit him on the break type teams.
Yeah, I mean, Naughton's a serviceable cover.
I don't want
to... He's 25. He's older than Walker.
He's not on the top of my list of people I want to get rid of.
No.
He's not so handsome.
Before we move on to other midfields, so right now we're talking getting rid of Danny Rose, anybody else in the back four we might need to...
Center back is probably a thing. And I wouldn't get rid of Danny Rose, I'd just keep him as cover and be like, you can be a backup if he wants to be a backup. I wouldn't ship him at the window. But he shouldn't be first choice.
It depends on who we bring in.
Yeah.
I think we should keep Danny Rose and Silver Tongan, and I'd keep everybody else. And bring in a center back. I would die. If we sold Vertonghen and brought in Lovren.
No.
Yes!
No, Dawson is allowed to if he wants to leave, or if Kabul decides to leave. I think Lovren and Vertonghen would be, like, the sex as a center-back pair. That would be unreal. And, like, Lovren seems like a realistic target.
I love it.
If we're going to poach anyone from Southampton.
Yep.
He seems kind of...
Team Lovren.
...along the way. So, I don't know, he'd be, like, one center-back, I think, just because Kabul is a question mark. And Michael Dawson, as much as he's a blood and guts player and he's a servant for the club... It's just he may not be cut out for what Poochie wants to do.
Well, I think we keep Dawson, and he is literally like fourth choice, fifth choice. He's what
locker room leader. Yeah.
Yeah, he's what Scott Parker was last year, but hopefully we don't have as many injuries and see Scott Parker starting regularly in Europa. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
He's great for fourth, and that's kind of what we thought we were going to get with Scotty, I think, when we kept him around that year. And brought in Dembele, we're like, no, you know, he's just going to be in the bat. Yeah. That didn't turn out so well. But thanks, Scott. I still have your jersey, and it's my favorite, besides my guilty one.
All right. So moving along to midfield, central midfield, not the wingers. We'll get to wingers later. I'm pretty sure central midfielders. I would say, for the right price, either Paulinho or Dembele can go. One of the two, but only for the right price. Kapui can go. Anything from him that I want. And then I would give Tom Carroll half a season before I decide what to do with him.
I personally, for midfield, like, would keep pretty much anyone who's a central kind of deep for playing player. I mean, I think mm-hmm. Paulinho, he just wasn't used right. He just wasn't used right. I think he, as when he's played with someone who's a holder, when he's freed from his defensive responsibilities and allowed to push forward and allowed to crash the box, the thing is, he's not a player who's going to circulate play anyways. Yep. He's not a circulating possession midfielder.
Yep.
He's going to come in on those late runs like he has. Like, he's not bad. He obviously works for Scolari in Brazil. So it's a matter of figuring out how to use him.
I know that name.
And then, with Dembele, the problem with Dembele that I see is that he's such a, and I mean, I think there's a number of writers who've noted this before. He's a very different kind of player because he's so strong. And he's so fluid with the ball when he's running with it. Like, he's very strong on the ball. Mm-hmm. He just has no sense of when he needs to distribute. Like, he draws players in, but then he doesn't pass the ball, or he holds onto the ball too long before he makes a run. He's just not, he doesn't fit into anything. It's not that he's bad. There's no real, like, aside from when he played with Sandro that one, like, two seasons ago or whatever, and that big run that they had before Sandro got hurt where they were really good.
Yeah,
that's my thing with Dembele. And then with Capu, I don't think we should tell him because Sandro's still a question mark injury-wise, to be honest. I mean, it's still 50-50.
And so is Dembele, really.
Yeah.
Well, the thing,
and Capu is good.
I'm not saying that he's not good, but it's, we have to make room for our loanies coming back, like Tom Carroll and Jake Livermore. Like, they're coming back. You know,
I don't know if Jake Livermore is going to be a permanent player, though. I would be surprised if he gets sold. He did very well at Hull, but...
But he's English and homegrown, so I think that's cool.
I guess.
The way the English Premier League is going, where they're trying to develop more English.
And I guess he is the Modric replacement, isn't he? So he's the next Luka Modric.
I think Pookie is flexible enough that he'll be able to rotate all the players in for the opponents instead of trying to play the same line over and over again.
Yeah, I agree. Well, my take on midfield is I think we can get, I hope Paulinho has a good World Cup, and I do hope we get good money for him, and it's not anything personal with him. He is a little frustrating to watch, but that, again, could really be because he hasn't been used correctly, or, you know, we just don't really understand him as a player yet. But I would love to keep Dembele, and that would either, he's either going to be fantastic or going to be a crash out with him. And part of that is because he has, within his career, shifted into a ton of different roles and played differently at Fulham, and I think started as a striker when he was younger. So I don't know that we're using him correctly, kind of with the Paulinho thing, but I don't really know that he has a strong position yet. And I think he's, what, 25, 26? He might be a late bloomer. I'm kind of willing to bet that, really hoping that that's the case, and I definitely want to keep him.
If I can just chime in a bit, that kind of ties into what I was saying, too, where he doesn't know what to do. Like, he's got those skills. He's got that skill set that is really, like, good.
Totally
but
agree.
It doesn't fit like any really conceptual position, I guess, would be the thing, because he has played in so many different spots, like you said.
And I think that's why him and a player like Paulinho have such hot and cold games, too, because it is dependent on who's playing around them more so than I think other people are on the pitch. Yeah. So I don't think we have room for two players like that, and I think that we'll get more money for Paulinho. So that's why I'd rather keep Dembele than Paulinho.
The problem is we should have played, if Sandro had been healthy, we should have been a Paulinho Sandro central midfield. Like, that should have been
with Eriksen.
That should have been, like, without question, our three midfield, because Paulinho would have been able to provide his Brazilian role, because it would have been like Oscar's playing the Eriksen role in Brazil over the summer. Like, Paulinho was just going to be a box to box, just popping up here and there, doing whatever he wants, and being more of a free role with some defensive responsibilities.
What about young Nabil? Nabil Bentaleb.
Well, personally, getting back to, like, not...
I'd keep him.
I'd keep him. I think that him and Holtby should be on loan next year. Or we should just sell Holtby. Like, come on.
So I'm ready to just sell Hopi. Sell to Everton for $8 million.
Yeah.
I think Bentaleb, though, he showed enough in positions where he didn't have to play as a holding midfielder that he was, like, he is good. He's very good. I don't think that he necessarily needs a loan for experience. He kind of got a trial by fire. He just needs to be put in a position to succeed.
I don't think he's going to be in a position to succeed without serious injuries to the squad, though.
True. That's the thing. I guess that is the question. But then if he is on a loan, he has to be sent somewhere to that.
Can make or break a season because
I
almost want to say like when Eriksen's when we need to rest Eriksen, I would put Dembele in the Eriksen position instead of like.
Yes, team that. Put I'd rather have Dembele or Sigurdsson in that role. If Eriksen needs a rest, I think those are the two.
Gilfie LaFleur is an interesting player in himself because I think he could rotate between the wings or the number 10. Like he's diverse. He's good enough to be like playing anywhere in the right behind the striker group positions.
I agree on that too. And he's never going to be the best at any of the positions on the squad. I think that's pretty established. But I think he's more consistent than Holtby. And I also think that he's, like you said, he's more versatile. And have a player that can move around like that is such a value, even if he's never our star. And it's funny because a lot of people have this conversation with wingers and midfielders, especially attacking midfielders and wingers. When I see a lot of conversations about this with Spurs fans is that they have, sell Holtby and Paulinho, keep Eriksen and Lamella, but no one ever mentions Gylfi, and I think that's kind of interesting. He's not a polarizing character unless you're a complete moron. And also he's just such a squad player, and I know I'm in love, I know he's my favorite player, but for that reason, actually, he seems to have a really good attitude about
I think with Gylfie Mayer-Lafleur, like he would I think when Lamella gets back, I think him and Lamella Eriksen would be like they would be able to switch interchangeably on the left, like throughout the entire game, and that would be like perfect. And then we would have either Townsend or Lennon on the right, who they'd be able to pop up or get that, be able to be one-on-one with the left or right back, wherever they're at, and they'll be able to to attack. And I think Pukki is smart enough to see that, because ABB did that same thing with Bale and Sigurdsson.
Well, I also want to know what, oh my gosh, this is the second time this has been mentioned to me, is Bale and Sigurdsson playing together, and there's that, I said this in our earlier pod, that's what I missed the most about last season, and I don't want to cry any more than I have today, so screw you for bringing that up. And second of all, we haven't mentioned Chadli, and what do we do with that guy? I don't know.
I just want to tie in, and it will tie into Chadli too. My thing is that there was one game this season, I know that Eriksen and Sigurdsson played, and I can't remember who the other person was. It may have been another like attacking midfielder, let's say. They were in that three behind the striker. We were playing 4-3-1, I think. Mm-hmm. And anyways, like what I noticed is that if you had those like three kinds of players, so take your Lamela, your Sigurdsson, Eriksen playing together. That's your three. Mm-hmm. That's gonna work really well because they'll interchange through everything, like you were saying. They'll move in and out, they'll work channels that way because they can all play in that sense. Mm-hmm. And then you don't necessarily need an out-and-out winger if you have Kyle Walker bombing up the right side and Fabio Contrao bombing up the left when we sign him. So it's like that's my thing with it. And Chadli, in the same way, just put him on the left wing. That's where he's good because he's an inverted winger. That's what he is. He cuts in on his right, but he's really technical and really good. He's just not super fast until he gets his speed. He doesn't have quick acceleration. He's not Lennon, he's not Townsend, he's not Bale in that sense. But when he gets to his speed, he's so strong. He's built like a brick house. Like he's a big guy. So I think if you play him and then you play Eriksson or Holtby, and then Sigurdsson or Lamela or someone else. I don't necessarily know if we need, and I don't necessarily know if Pochettino plays with a really pacey winger as mm-hmm. such. I mean, I can't really remember that much because I just, the finer points of Southampton's strategy kind of elude me from time to time because I'm not that much of a tactics. I'm not that much of a tactics head.
No, I'm not either.
I mean, you need whatever. I guess it was who I don't know who would play if Pochettino even plays it like that. Who would play the Lallana role or whatever, like in that sense, like coming in from the left in central. But I think we have enough talented players who can interchange in that center spot that, you know, it'll be all right. And then you have Townsend or Lennon to be your more direct attacking option. Mm-hmm. But for creative players, like who can do a lot of things in that area, you have Chadli, Sigurdsson, Eriksson, Lamela, Holtby. Like, that's almost too many, too. You need to get rid of them. But I don't necessarily know if we're going to need an out-and-out winger all the time.
Yeah, I think we will. I think the thing is we might have to sell like one or two wingers to send them alone. Like
We're gonna have to trim somewhere. The squad's almost too big. There's so many talented young players.
Yeah, I agree.
And Pochettino is big on youth too, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Fantastic if he can set up a transition. Although who knows who's gonna run the youth side of things?
Yeah.
Hopefully Stefan Freund or Chris Ramsey or the two of them together. That'd be great.
Yeah,
but if that could happen,
I'm almost even though he's my favorite player, like now, like if we don't sell Lennon now, I don't think we'll ever be able to sell him.
Yeah.
I don't want to see him go because I think he's a good player, mm-hmm. he's a good locker room leader. But we have if we don't sell Lennon now, like he's getting to that point, that age in wingers where this is like the last time you'll get like a good maximum value out of him.
And it may just become realistic that he can't. Pochettino may see a use for him, or he may just realize. I mean, the funny thing is, under the first season with ABB, he was really surprisingly good. He did a lot of good things and really adapted his game in a big way. But it's almost like he might have plateaued, and maybe it's time to as sad as it is to say.
His plateau is still more. As far as like being with the team, like what the team needs, it's a lot better than anything that any other person or player that plays on the right could give.
Yeah, but I guess it's just that direct pacey winger may not be. Yeah. You may not need as many of them.
Well, I agree with that, and I think that this is all contingent on the solid left back. Like
yes.
There's just, I don't think we can truly not play with a winger, no matter how sluggish, quote-unquote, our left wingers have been, as far as not being helpful, if we're not going to, I just think this is a contingency on a solid left back.
Fabio Contra.
Here's another thing, we also probably need to loan out Andros Townsend over for a year.
I don't know if Townsend needs a loan as much as he needs to be molded into something.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm not sure if that's going to happen here or somewhere else. But like we said, the squad is pretty big right now, and if we are not going to play with true wingers, in the sense of the term, then it's going to be a waste of time for him to be at Spurs. For his career development.
Yeah.
Although it would suck because he's a Tottenham lad.
I know. Yeah, I do have a soft spot for him. I do really like the guy.
I think he's got loads of potential, but is he a surplus?
Yeah.
We have a lot of surplus. And speaking of surplus, we have to go to the strikers, and I'm pretty sure we'll probably all be in agreement. I buy one of the door. He can go. Adebayor can go. Soldado, Kane, and we buy Lukaku, and then we'll be set there.
I have no opinion on strikers. They can stay the same. Okay.
My thing is, I think Kane. Apparently, Pochettino really liked Kane and maybe tried to sign him in January. That's a
rumor. Yeah, I heard that today. Yeah.
Which would make sense, I think, probably based on the way he plays, because Harry Kane is very good. He just, I don't think, as many people say, he fits between like a striker and a center forward. He doesn't really, but he's not either or. But I think he can be used well. He's very talented. I think Soldado has to stay, because if Pochettino, based on Michael Cayley's wonderful article from today, if you haven't seen it, he wrote a really good stats article about the way Pochettino plays, and there was a note of through balls being a big thing. And for me, if Pochettino likes through balls, and we're going to do that, who's the man? Soldado. Is the man who should stick around. And then when it comes to Addy, I'm kind of like, yeah. It all depends on how he feels he would react, I think, to the situation.
I love the guy, but not heartbroken either way. I could totally not even sign a striker, and I'd be completely, completely fine.
Yeah, I'd be okay, but if we have a chance with Lukaku, we need to get rid of Adebayor, because Adebayor... Oh, you know who else we have to sell? We forgot about him, and I don't know why we did.
Hugo?
Then we'll Ashley Okada.
Oh,
yeah,
he's gotta go. Damn, we probably do. I just want to take a moment to make a really hot take / bet, and I'm really glad it's just the three of us today. If we sign Lukaku, I will ship a case of beer to both of your homes. It's not happening.
Pretty good deal right there.
If Chelsea even entertained any good offer for Lukaku from Spurs, like, and Levy, I hope he would jump on it and say $30 million. Fine, we'll take it.
Lukaku is the evolutionary Drogba, just like in the way he plays. He is Drogba 2.0 in so many just like intangible qualities that Didier Drogba had that were just like, and that he still has, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. He's still a beast.
I know.
He's just been this super powerful striker who just would muscle people off. And Lukaku has all those qualities. And for God's sake, Mourinho is going to be like, I don't care about him.
We
need God.
If we're going to deal with Chelsea on any player, I want it to be Bertrand, and I don't want it to be Lukaku. And that is a take that's very hot.
No, ma'am.
That's a bad take.
Bad take.
I guess though, who else would you want if Lukaku's not an option? Let's say if you're going to sell Adebayor and bring in another striker.
Realistically, I'd like to bring in someone really young, like Harry Kane's age. And I'd have no idea who that is, but
here's a hot take. Do you think with the right coaching, Jose Altidore, because he's like
no.
You're
done making suggestions in the past 10 seconds.
Version of Lukaku, and not in like a disabled term, not as good or not as talented, but he's just as big. He's got that linebacker, running back built to him. He can hold up.
No, I mean, like my thing with Josie is, it's just like, yeah, he has a lot of the qualities that you would think like a line-leading striker has. There just seems to be, and I don't know if it's coaching or it's just a mental thing with him, or maybe he'll never realize it.
Together.
He's not going to click. And it's kind of, like, that's always been, I really don't have any place commenting on U.S. men's national team.
Here's my thing. I think we're done talking about Spurs for a while. We'll start racking it up. But with Josie, Josie's problem is a lot of Americans players' problems, especially in soccer, is they've always been the best player on the pitch coming up, and they've never really had a chance to challenge themselves or been like, I have to actually work. They've always had to use like their natural athletic ability rather than their technical skill like Europeans do. Doesn't have that technical, doesn't know how to use something other than his athletic systems to win.
And if we want to digress into the development of youth soccer in North America, I've been in the trenches for that, like, for 6 or 7 years doing that. Obviously in a small province in Canada, so it's not a big sample size, but that is an issue, is that, you know, coaching is a problem where really successful players are coached. They're made to be the center of a team based on their athleticism. They get the technical skills to succeed. They need to work hard to do it themselves, but in general, like you say, the athletics and the fact that you're stronger and bigger and faster, and you and like you're taller than everyone else, and you're in a 14 group, like in that age group, yeah. you succeed. And that's definitely a problem, I think, with a lot of like American players. Yeah, absolutely. Is that, you know, you're the best there based on athletic things, but technically, although it's moving there, we just don't have the same technical focus that you have in Europe. Like where, you know, by the time you're an under 10 or under 12 player, you can take the ball down to a dead stop into the air, and like you know to do dribble, basic things. Yeah. It's just, so that's a thing. I think that's a problem with, yeah, that would be a thing. But I don't want to get into development of soccer players in this continent because it's just a mess.
I didn't even know they had soccer in Canada.
Oh, we do. We do. Long live Paul Saltieri.
And then the other team was the oldest on the team was 15. And they were all playing U19. And like after the game, I was talking to the coach. He was like, your kids look really small. Like, what's going on? I was like, oh, they're all 15. I was like, they've been dominating the U15 team. Like, I want them to become better players. So I have to get them to play against people who are like bigger. Like, if they want to be professional athletes, they're going to be a 19-year-old playing against a 26, 27-year-old. They need to learn how to, like, not get by on just their pure athleticism. They have to get by on, like, being a team and, like, doing everything right. They can't get
yeah. by with, like, just no, lazy. Absolutely. And one of the problems, though, that you run into as a coach is that if you're trying to coach that, and I ran into this firsthand, is that you're trying to coach, like, that your players get technical skills and learn to pass the ball and learn to move and those mm-hmm. kinds of things. And then you come up against a team who puts, like, their best player, who probably when they play for a provincial team or for, like, their state team, would normally play in this position. They make them their striker, and they just hit long balls to them. And it's like that kid scores all the goals. So it just defeats the purpose of trying to, like, develop a player to be able to do things yeah. as opposed to, you know, just being like, oh, let's win everything and let's make our kids, you know, really good.
Yep, it's going to take time, but hopefully North America. I really, like, my one day I want to see, like, the United States, Honduras, Costa Rica, and Canada make the World Cup. And Canada, like, knocking Mexico
out. I'd like to make the hex, to be honest. I'd like to get back to the hex.
Baby steps.
Yeah. I just put that out there. I'd really like to not lose by 7 goals in a game that decides that.
2022 is Canada's goal to making the World Cup.
Well, we want to host a World Cup, apparently. We're hosting the Women's World Cup, though, in 20... next year.
Yeah,
2015.
20, yeah.
We have the under 20 or whatever this year, or under 23.
I'm going to try to make it out to that. I'm going to try to make it out to, like, to Toronto.
Yeah. I still think there are jobs available. I still think I might entertain the idea of being like a team liaison or something, just for
yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah, because it's all across the country too, which is really neat. So it's going to be on the East Coast. It's like where I live, on the East Coast. It's going to be Ontario, Quebec, out in Vancouver, all kind of around. I think there might be probably 6 or 7 sites. So it's going to be neat. And the way CSA looks at it is that they want to use it as a test run. For if they put it together successfully, then the bid would be in for, like, say, 2026, 2030.
You guys have oil money now, so you guys might be able to host the World Cup.
Maybe even North Dakota will do their own.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be cool to have a World Cup here, but that's a long shot. They have to get the government on side, and that's not going to happen.
All right, well, I think we've had enough of this. I'm not sure if we're going to do a predictions for the World Cup now. We're going to wait for the next pod and everybody's more available. But anybody else have any last second hot takes before we head out for the night?
My hot take for Mauricio is that he has a big task ahead of him in terms of figuring out who he wants to keep and who he wants to ship out. The good thing is, though, he has the time because we did appoint him so quickly. Yeah, that's about it. Good luck, Mauricio.
I would like to wish Pochi Sticks the best in his 6 months with Tottenham Hotspur, and I would like to ask him to sell Vertonghen and buy Kranjčar.
I'm going to support Pookie as much as I can for as long as I can. I'm going to love every move that he makes. I want him to continue using his translator because I actually really enjoyed his, like, telling the British media to go fuck off. That I hope he continues that tradition.
I don't think he... I think that was a stipulation that he can't, which is shitty.
Damn. We'll
I hope
I love it, too. It's great.
That's... because that was awesome. I really did appreciate that.
Me too.
I hope he continues that, and the youth and our scouts move back and, like, scout Croatia for some more future Spurs stars. So.
I think the big takeaway is that the future is bright and that the future is really white right now, because we've finally got someone who seems to have all of the qualities that we were looking for. Fingers crossed.
We're all going to start to wear shades.
So, on behalf of my co-host, Will I Am and Bricks, this is Tottenham Makes Me Cry, and thank you for listening. Come on, you Spurs.